Well, good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud here on KVIA. A couple of great old friends of ours along on the program this evening. First of all, Quinn Gresham from the Errol Rock Lyceum Theater will be along. They have an incredible 2014 season planned, and we're going to give you a preview of all of the shows on this year's season coming up on the show. Later, Mary Bareil. She's written some wonderful books and plays about the history of Missouri. She's got two new books out, children's books, as a matter of fact, about a couple of fascinating characters in our state's history. So we talk Errol Rock Lyceum Theater with Quinn Gresham and Missouri history in children's books with Mary Bareil tonight. It's Thinking Out Loud, next on KVIA. All right, it's KBIA, your NPR station, Thinking Out Loud. And starting in just, 2 or 3 weeks here on June the 4th is the 2014 season for the Errol Rock Lyceum Theater, professional theater here in the heart of Missouri in this beautiful, historic little town of Errol Rock, just about 45 minutes up the road from Columbia. And Quinn Gresham is here. He's the artistic director for the Errol Rock Lyceum Theater. And this is... I guess this is just one of those things we do every year on this show. It's summertime, and Quinn's in here to talk about Errol.
I look forward to it. It's the one time of year I get to sit here with my friend Darren.
All right, fantastic. I want to talk about the season. You've got some fantastic shows coming up. I always assume at this point that most people are familiar with the Lyceum, but for the few that maybe are new to town or aren't too turned on to what's going on quite yet, talk about this, because this really is kind of a cool deal. Professional theater in this town of, what is the population now of Errol Rock?
56.
Wow.
People.
Yes.
That does not include animals. 56 human beings live in Errol Rock. Yeah, it's... It is always worth telling because it is one of the great art stories, I think, in this nation, that 54 years ago, a group of people decided, well, this town that has no population base really ought to have a theater in it. And at that, the Lyceum was formed at about the same time that the Friends of Errol Rock were formed, the historical preservation group in town who has made Errol Rock look as wonderful as it does today. And those two groups sort of in tandem worked to build this thing that honestly on paper is an absolute nightmare. I don't know why you would even think it was a good idea.
It's a preposterous idea, yeah.
Right. But it is a real testament to their dream and their passion for all things Errol Rock. And also the power of theater to get people together, regardless of whether it makes sense on paper or not.
And some incredibly talented people come through there. Now, I always have to hedge my statement a little bit with this. I have a deep involvement and love for community theater and the incredible talent that we've got here in mid-Missouri. What you guys are talking about is professional theater, and talk about the process of bringing in the actors for and actresses for these shows, because you guys are bringing in people from Hollywood. You're bringing in people from Broadway.
Right. Yeah, we do our very best to utilize talent that is here. But yes, we are a professional theater, so we are hiring contract killers here. we go to New York for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. This year, just for the New York auditions alone, we received upwards of 12,000 submissions from actors in that market that wanted to be seen for our season. And we spend every minute of every day looking at these actors, getting to know all of the new ones, reacclimating with some of the folks that we've worked with before. And put together our 9-show season based on those 2 weeks of auditions. It's an incredibly fun project. It is a massive puzzle.
Yeah.
And I have to confess that every year at the end of a successful season, and really that's all I remember are successful seasons at this point, I look back and think, how in the world did all that happen? It's just a miracle.
Quinn Gresham, Errol Rock Lyceum Theater. As we get started, I want to mention they've got a wonderful website, lyceumtheater.org, and you can keep track of everything that's going on there. You can order tickets there for the performances we're going to tell you about, find out a lot more about the performances, and we're going to just go through the season from June through December, and we'll start with the first one, and you guys are opening up with one of my absolute favorites, King and I.
That's right. This is actually the very first time the King and I has ever appeared on the Lyceum stage.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And when I was a kid, the very first live theater I remember going to see was The King and I.
Yeah.
Starring Yul Brynner, actually.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
I don't remember much. I was very young. Yeah, I remember a bald guy and some gold scenery, you know. But in back in the days when Mr. Brenner toured in the show and in the film and also on Broadway, you would be hard pressed to find many Asian actors actually playing the characters in Siam. So we went. We made a special effort to make sure that we found the most terrific and also most appropriate actors to represent the palace citizens in our production of The King and I. So hopefully audience members will walk away moved by this wonderful story, but also moved further because of the authenticity of it.
Great, great. Oh, that's going to be fun. June 4th through June the 14th for the performances for that one, The King and I, Rodgers and Hammerstein, of course, wonderful music in that show. The next one starts on June 21st, and this is going to be a lot of fun. You guys are going to have a blast with Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, it's very different from The King and I.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, it's funny. I talk to audience members and patrons about Little Shop of Horrors, and I think that sometimes people are afraid of the last word in the title, that it's going to be, you know, something terrifying. It's far from that.
No, it's silly and hilarious.
Yeah. Well, it's a great send-up of those horrible 50s and 60s sci-fi films, Little Shop of Horrors being one of them.
Yes.
For folks that don't know, the plot centers around a gentleman named Seymour Krelborn, who is an assistant in a florist shop, and he discovers this odd flytrap sort of plant one day. And later learns that the plant only thrives when it is fed a steady diet of human blood. The plant grows and grows and grows and becomes this malevolent blues singing thing. And we have a terrific guy. He was in our production of Hank Williams' Lost Highway last year. He played the T-Tot, the street singer.
Yeah.
He's going to join us to voice Audrey 2, the name of the plant. Audience members are just going to go wild. For folks that haven't heard his voice, it is something absolutely worth the price of admission right there alone. And there's a lot of show beyond just the plant.
That's a fun. I'm a big fan of the old TV show Mystery Science Theater 3000. Uh-huh. And so making fun of these old Roger Corman, Ed Wood, Japanese actor in rubber monster suit movies. Just tearing those to pieces is always a blast for me. So that's going to be a good show. Now, a lot of the shows that they're doing at Arrow Rock this year are traditional Broadway favorites, but this is quite possibly the newest one, but it is also one that has become incredibly popular. And speaking of being very silly, this probably is going to top the bar for silliness. Monty Python's Spamalot.
I would say it is the definition of silliness.
Yes.
in 2005, I was in New York helping Philip Caulfield cast the 2005 season, not knowing that later in the year I was going to become the artistic director. And any time I go to New York, I always make a habit of seeing whatever is the newest and hottest thing. And I grew up in a family of people that loved Monty Python. So around the dinner table, we would often be acting out the various skits. So I thought, well, okay, a live musical version of all of these things that I love, I got to go see it. And I walked away from it, and I remember this so clearly. I walked away thinking, I can't wait till we have the rights to this and we can do this in Arrow Rock. It's just going to be a real treat. So essentially, it's Monty Python and the Holy Grail, that great cult favorite, musicalized. And, of course, musicalized in sometimes a very traditional way, but always with a wink and a nod, referring to the style itself.
Yes.
It is nonstop hilarity. And the great thing about Monty Python, as far as I'm concerned, is the balance between, you know, low-level bathroom humor.
Right.
But also brilliant intellectual humor all in the same moment. Yes. Nobody else has done it as well as they did it.
Yeah. That was the great thing about Monty Python, was that you could have some intelligence to it, but also the potty humor that was always, you know.
Right.
There's a fourth grade boy in all of us still, or a fourth
right,
grade
exactly.
girl still in all of us. And so that's never going to stop being funny. Quinn Gresham is with us again. LyceumTheater.org is the website if you want to find out more about the upcoming season. It gets started with The King and I on June the 4th. And then following Little Shop of Horrors and Spam a lot. This one just finished a run here in town at Maplewood. It's an absolute classic whodunit. Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution, starting in the fourth week of July.
And I would say, if you saw it at Maplewood, do everything you can to forget the ending and come see it with us.
Yes.
We have now for, gosh, 4 or 5 years been producing an Agatha Christie mystery. Witness for the Prosecution is a different sort of vehicle than the others. Typically, it's a parlor in some sort of Victorian mansion.
Right.
Someone's dead, and we're trying to figure out who it is. This is actually a courtroom procedural, so it's sort of like Law and Order meets the Mousetrap. It does still have that uniquely Agatha Christie unexpected twist and turn, especially toward the end of the play. The last maybe 2 minutes of the play, every time I've seen this production, have left the audience gasping. So that is a lot of fun. The show takes place both in the legal offices of Sir Wilfrid Robarts and also in the Old Bailey courtroom. So you know, for fans of law, even, you get to see a fairly realistic portrayal of the legal court system,
the
British court system.
Well, people that love those old courtroom dramas and Perry Mason and all of that stuff,
right.
this is where it all comes from, man. The next one, you know, it's funny, we've talked about making fun of the old Ed Wood movies and the old monster movies and things like that, but if there is a world that deserves a certain amount of satire and having some fun at their expense, perhaps best suited is the world of opera. And next up is a great one, Lend Me a Tenor from Ken Ludwig.
I hate to say it, that most of us in the theater world make more jokes about opera than are probably even appropriate. And Ken Ludwig must have sensed that when he wrote this play. Essentially, it centers on the Cleveland Opera Company, Cleveland Grand Opera Company, I believe. And they are welcoming Tito Morelli, the greatest tenor of his time, to perform. And then shortly thereafter, he is believed to be dead, and great hilarity and hijinks ensue. It is a complex and convoluted plot that defies description, but I can safely say audience members sitting out there can plan to laugh from the word go till the end of the play. It is perfectly constructed. This is a great door-slamming farce, so audience members that saw our production of Boeing can expect a similar sort of feel. And actually, for anybody that did see Boeing, a gentleman named Warren Kelly was in that production. He played the friend from Wisconsin, I believe is where he was from, Robert. He's sort of a Jerry Lewis kind of guy. He's going to be in our production of Lend Me a Tenor and is going to be an absolute scream, so we're excited about that.
That one's going to be a blast. Quinn Gresham is our guest. The Errol Rock Lyceum Theater season about to get underway with The King and I on June the 4th. They've got an entire season planned out here, including a holiday show we'll be telling you about, and you can find the whole thing at lyceumtheater.org. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. The next show, as we're previewing the upcoming summer season from the Errol Rock Lyceum, Johnny Cash music featured in Ring of Fire, and you and I are both of Southern descent, and so the fact that the great songwriters and the great performers of that time and place and the people like Patsy Cline, like Hank Williams, like Johnny Cash are being recognized not just as great country singers and great country songwriters, but as great singers and songwriters. Mm-hmm. And Johnny Cash, in addition, just a remarkable story.
Absolutely. And you and I share a history in Arkansas.
Right.
My parents went to high school in a small town in South Arkansas, and their guidance counselor was Johnny Cash's aunt. So my family feels a great deal of connection to the Cash family. But joking aside, not that I really am, we are so looking forward to the show. I mean, there are literally dozens of Johnny songs packed into this show. For audience members or for moviegoers, I should say, who saw Walk the Line, that film depicted Johnny Cash's trials and tribulations.
Right.
It was a true biopic in that regard. Ring of Fire is more a celebration of the music itself.
Mm-hmm.
We have 8 brilliantly talented musicians who will play all of this music and sing all of this music. Audiences are just going to be absolutely filled with this particular Johnny Cash magic.
Sure, sure. And you know, we tend to use the C word in talking about Johnny Cash, but people have to remember when he came along, this wasn't about country music. He was a teen rock and roll idol,
right.
Elvis, you know, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis in that crowd guy, and then sort of evolved later into being a country music guy. Also have to throw in a completely self-important plug here. His daughter, Roseanne Cash, is going to be on the coming concert series season. We're looking forward to having Roseanne Cash in town. I'm a huge fan of her, so that one's going to be a great show also. Quinn Gresham with us next on the concert series, next on the Lyceum Theater season. Around the World in 80 Days. And this isn't a classic. This is one that's been around for a while, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys do with this.
Yeah, I would say anybody that's read Jules Verne's novel or seen any of the various film adaptations would think, well, how in the world do you get that on stage?
Yeah.
It is so epic, and there's so many locales as the world is traversed. Well, making it even more interesting, our particular cast has 5 actors in it playing all of these various characters. I believe that 35, something like that, 35
wow.
characters. Friends of the Lyceum that have come to see our many productions of the Greater Tuna shows, you can sort of expect that sort of approach where there are only 5 actors, but you're going to feel like you're watching a cast of at least 35. It's a terrifically fun adaptation full of slapstick, and it's told in a very theatrical way. I just think it's going to be a real delight for our audiences.
Around the World in 80 Days. The next one I'm very interested in also in seeing, speaking of the American South, Cotton Patch Gospel, and a wonderful work. People maybe not as familiar with the fact that it's a Harry Chapin deal.
That's right. It was actually the last thing he wrote.
Right. And some great, great songs.
Fantastic tunes. Some people would say it's some of the best stuff that Harry Chapin wrote, and that's saying something.
No kidding.
It's based on the book by Clarence Jordan, which basically takes the Gospel According to Matthew and sets it in 20th century Georgia. There's a great deal of fun had in that sort of conceptualization of the gospel. But there's also a great deal of the truth of the gospel that comes through that as well. It is a toe-tapping, feel-good musical that is incredibly inspirational for people as well. We've done, I don't know how many productions of Cotton Patch. This is the first since I've been in my position. But I'm really excited to bring in my old friend from college, who was also a Lyceum favorite, Ben Nordstrom, to play the role of Matthew. And then he also plays Jesus and a variety of other characters throughout the show. He is top-notch. We've assembled a fantastic bluegrass band to play all of that wonderful Harry Chapin music. It's going to be a real—the word I keep wanting to say is a hootenanny.
Yes.
But a hootenanny with real meaning.
Fantastic. Cotton Patch Gospel. Now, that will wrap up the summer season for Arrow Rock, but there's one other thing while we've got you here I want to make quick mention of. We'll probably get you back in sometime in the fall and as this gets closer and talk about it again. But you're going to do a holiday show in December.
Yes, we have. We have not done this, and we've wanted to do it for a very long time, and the fates just aligned, and we finally decided, okay, we're going to do this year. I sat down with Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol and adapted it to the stage, as many other people have done.
Sure.
We hope that this will become an annual tradition for us in Arrow Rock. This is a full-scale, traditional approach to the source material, at least on the page, which is the only place it has existed yet, is an awful lot of fun for me to work on. So we're really eager to get all of this put together and to make sure that we have a special, what we hope will become a time-honored tradition for Mid-Missouri families. And the thing is, too, you know, for folks that have been to Arrow Rock and have driven around and looked at the architecture, it is Dickens.
Yeah,
it fits the right time.
Yeah. Well, we're running short of time. We want to thank Quinn Gresham for coming out again. LyceumTheater.org. You can order tickets there. There are season passes, tickets for the individual shows. Make sure you get tickets. A lot of these shows sell out, and plan your visit out there. Plan to spend some time in Arrow Rock. It's a beautiful town. There's a lot of great places to eat and things to do while you're there. All right, it's KBIA, your NPR station, Thinking Out Loud, and we've got a couple of guests this week, including our old friend Mary Burriel. And Mary's got a couple of books that have come out in recent months, and Mary, as an author, as a playwright, as a lot of things, has always had this wonderful interest in the history of our region, but she's done something a little bit different with the last couple. She's got 2 books out in recent months that are about the history of our region, but specifically are children's books dealing with the African-American history of Missouri, and we're going to talk about both of them with Mary Burriel. First of all, Mary, welcome. Great to have you back in here.
Well, thank you. It's always wonderful to be here.
I want to talk about these couple of books. Sam Nightingale just came out recently, and we will get to that in just a moment. But first of all, the first one that came out just a few months back, J. Milton Turner, An American Hero. And I'll be perfectly honest, I was not familiar with this story. And what a great story for all kids to know about for the history of our state. And talk a little bit about J. Milton Turner and his story and let's start by having you tell us who he is and just kind of how this all came about.
Well, Turner was among the first African-American diplomats. He was born a slave. His father purchased his freedom as well as his mother's freedom. He studied at Oberlin for at least one semester we know of. And then he became an educator and certainly right after the Civil War, he was put in charge of starting schools for African-American children throughout the state of Missouri.
Interesting. And a lot of other things. The story of how he and his mother were purchased from slavery with a little bit of chicanery is an entertaining story.
A little bit of a lie, yes. Turner's father had purchased his freedom, and normally that's what would happen. The father would purchase the freedom, then go to work to earn the money to purchase the family's freedom. In this case, he was working to purchase his wife and son, but the owner decided to put them up for auction.
Mm-hmm.
And the father did not have enough money. Meanwhile, his wife had hurt her hand, and he brought his wife to a doctor who was also an abolitionist. And he told them the story, and the doctor said, "Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it." He bound up her hand and sent them home. And what the doctor did was to go to the owner and say that the mother was so badly damaged, her hand was so badly damaged that she needed a very expensive operation. And the owner said, "You know, I'm not spending that kind of money on a slave." So when they went up for auction, the mother and son, James Milton Turner, were sold very cheaply.
There were a lot of stories that you could have told, and we'll talk about Sam Nightingale in a moment, but what was it specifically about this story that brought it to your attention? Because I know you do a lot of research. There's a lot that goes into these books. They're kids' stories, but they're not superficial.
Well, I'm fortunate. I live in Boonville, and we have a very active community as far as history goes. And in our sculpture park, we have a bust of Turner.
Okay.
So I think it was Bob Dyer who brought him pretty much to everybody's attention. And Gary Kramer at the State Historical Society wrote, I believe, the first biography of Turner. So seeing this, it's really kind of a shame. Our history tends to be shared among adults, but the kids lose out on these really incredible stories of people we never hear of, and yet were outstanding not only in Missouri but internationally. I mean, Turner, to be a diplomat at that time, he was only the second African American to serve as a diplomat overseas. He also became a lawyer. He ended up suing the Cherokee Nation for owning slaves.
Oh, yeah.
So it was this man who, and then traveled all. One of the stories about him is that he was in a school in Kansas City, setting up a school, and he heard a horseman outside saying, "You know, is this the school for the African kids?" And he turned and went outside, and the man says, "I hear about what you're doing. I really like what you're doing." And he threw him a sack of coins. And the story goes, because Turner did tell this story to a newspaper later in life, that when he asked the man, "Well, who are you? Thank you." And the man said, "Well, I'll be back. And my name is Jesse James." Now, do we have any direct proof of this? No, except that Turner told the story.
Right.
And James, of course, was Jesse James. I mean, he could turn around, do something like that, and then go off and murder six people. But those are the stories that we don't want to lose, and we should have our generations in the future sharing them and understanding what people went through to help build the state.
The book, again, is called J. Milton Turner, An American Hero. It is out on Monograph Publishing. Mary Burreel is with us, the author of this book, and then the other book, and this one's brand new. It's just come out in recent weeks. It's called Sam Nightingale, Slave, Storyteller, and Conjure Man. And tell me about Sam Nightingale.
Well, Sam, the reason I came to know him was he had lived in Boonville in the latter part of his life, which was the last part of the 19th century. Sam came from Africa. He was believed to be, at his death, the one of the few remaining African imported slaves. He was quite proud of that. He was also known as Guinea Sam because he more than likely came from Guinea in Africa. Mm-hmm. He was his life in this country. He was at many plantations. At some point, he ran away and lived with a Native American tribe. He said that at that point he learned a lot of the herbal law that he used later, as far as and conjuring, which is not as much pure magic as it is learning to call on the spirits for help. It was positive. It wasn't a negative thing. So he ended up when his master's son purchased him and brought him to Boonville. And there he, again, became known as a conjure man. He wore gold earrings. They always referred to him as a little bitty dried-up man with a very elaborate walking stick. His story was that he was blown over to Boonville in a cannonball from Africa. And the cannonball hit a steamboat in the middle of the river. And Sam swam to shore and then walked up High Street and announced that Guinea Sam was here and that the world was now going to change.
Talk about where people can go find these books. I found them on Amazon if people want to do that. But, you know, there's lots of places to buy books.
Well, it's interesting. The Turner book was actually published by the Cooperative Extension in Cooper County.
Okay.
So you can purchase it from them. You can purchase it online. The Guinea Sam book is available from Truman State University Press. Again, online directly from them or from Amazon. But
Nice. Now, we mentioned that Truman State did the publishing on this, and I noticed that it says it's part of a nonfiction series of notable Missourians. Do you know anything about that, and can you tell us more about what's happening with that?
Yeah, I was interested in seeing a series done for younger readers, and I wasn't able to find one about Missourians, particularly for sixth graders in that area. So I went to Truman and I pitched the idea, and a bunch of us got together and wrote up, outlines and who we would cover. And now we have an editorial board. We meet several times a year. We're having six books come out each year for at least the next 3 years, and we're already planning 2 years after that. So.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. If I may editorialize for a moment, see the wonderful things that can happen when universities do this stuff, and a university press is something that's worth...
Oh, yeah. They're incredibly important to our history and who we are. So sure. I love them all.
Fantastic. Mary Bareil, again, you can find the books online, and the newest one, Sam Nightingale, Slave Storyteller and Conjure Man, and then there is also available from Mary J. Milton Turner, An American Hero. Wonderful to see you. Have a great summer. We'll look forward to getting you back in here again soon.
Thank you. You too.
And our thanks once again to our guests, Mary Bareil and Quinn Gresham from the Arrow Rock Lyceum Theater. Thanks for tuning in this evening for Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Remember, you can keep up with all of our programs and hear past programs as well at our website. Go to kbia.org and just search for Thinking Out Loud. Be sure to tune in for our other programs. We're back Friday evening with the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Saturday morning, it's Thinking Out Loud Saturday Sports this weekend, the final program for the season. We've got a lot to talk about, including an NCAA softball regional in town with some old familiar sounding teams, Bradley, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, and the Kansas Jayhawks. That's right, KU is coming to Columbia for the softball regional this weekend, and we'll tell you all about that, everything happening with Tiger Sports on Thinking Out Loud Saturday Sports, Saturday morning from 6 until 7 o'clock, and at kbiasports.org. And then tune in again next Tuesday evening for another Thinking Out Loud here on KBIA. Till then, for Associate Producer Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.